The year that made me.
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 A year a person making, that is the caper. In the long history of trans-Tasman cultural appropriation, think Farlap, think Russell Crowe, the Pavlova, hard on the heels of cake steps this man.
And I suppose it only had one owner, a little old lady who only drove it on Sundays.
Well, actually, she's an ex-rental. A mate of mine thrashed the ring out of her for a fair bit, brought her in here, see if I could find some bunny to fit into it.
That's remarkably frank of you.
Well, it's not a lot of commission in a $700 vehicle. I'm not going to muck about all day selling it.
Tell us about it.
Well, the bodywork's pretty well rooted, as you can see, but, well, they never give up, these old sixes, do they? You know, a little hard to start, runs like a haunted shithouse for a bit, but once she warms up...
A snippet there from 1988 New Zealand film Never Say Die. John Clark, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
See, there we are. Well, there we are, teetering on the brink of comic form.
Well, indeed. And I don't want to countermand in any sense your glorious opening to this segment, but it does assume I've been made.
Yeah, okay. That is a fair point, I suspect.
Yeah, which I'm hoping isn't the case because...
Well, maybe you're in the making.
Well, I'm sure I'm in the making and I look forward to same.
You're a student of form, aren't you? A lot of your work sort of hangs around a structure.
Yes, I think it's very interesting to be in an audience, for example, and be aware that you need to know what you're looking at or listening to. You need to know what the form is, even if the form's being varied, especially perhaps if it's being varied, you need to know what it is. So I've always had a sort of instinctive interest in all of that. I suppose I grew up with the Goon Show in my ears as a 1950s child, and was aware that that was anarchic and amorphous in all sorts of ways and completely surreal. But each of the characters is sitting inside the form of English social structure. And you need to know that or the thing won't be funny.
Where does Eccles sit?
Well, Eccles is a moron.
Of course.
And most of the people in it, in the allegedly successful England that is portrayed in the Goon Show, which is not very successful, as it happens, because it's written by Milligan, who's just come out of a war he can't believe we won, and which traumatised him in all sorts of productive but slightly upsetting ways. Most of the characters in it are mountebanks or fools, or in the case of Bloodnock, a glorious combination. And I think I remember thinking that this was kind of surreal, but it depends on your understanding of all sorts of aspects of the real, or you won't get the stuff, and you certainly won't get what underlies it.
It's an amazing moment to be from. I mean, your generation, which is kind of like mine too a bit, but that having that contact with those post-war people, they had that moment of incredible richness.
Yeah, well, a lot of stuff in the arts was being done by people who'd been in the Second World War. I mean, most of your parents' friends had been in the Second, you know. So most of the photographs in our house were taken in Egypt and Italy. And
where your dad did.
Yeah.
Fine service. There were
people in, and my mother did too. She was in the New Zealand Forces in Italy. That's where they met. But a lot of the pictures were of people in uniform. They were people I knew very often, but the pictures of them in the house would have been in the photo album would have been in uniform.
Teetering a little bit forward to your year, which is 1967.
It is.
We find you where?
Well, I've selected that year because after a pretty bleak and impoverishing kind of secondary schooling, that was the year I went to university. I'd left school a bit early and I'd been working in a shearing gang for quite a while.
Sounds like a criminal operation of some sort.
Oh, and it was glorious. It was just fantastic. I loved it. The smell of lanolin is... I can't walk into a wool shed without wanting to, you know, peel a couple of old ewes off and poke them down the chute. But I went to university and I met at university a lot of very, very smart people of my own age who were talented, interested in a huge range of things, and my fairly limited world the walls came down and the windows opened, and I've chosen that year because it was the beginning of my interest in my own imagination and the creative capacities of all of us.
John Clarke has just revealed the year that made him, which 1967 is it at university. What university, John?
It was the Victoria University of Wellington.
You say that, you know, the walls came down, but you were you aware of the enormity of that opportunity? A piece you wrote about your dad on his death, where you say that, I mean, this is something he never had, that he never...
Yeah, that's right.
What might he have been had he had that opportunity as well?
Yes, I think my parents' generation were definitely aware that there was an that my generation had an opportunity that they had not had. When I was at that age, my parents were living in a depression, which followed a war and preceded another one that they were going to have to go and risk their lives in. Our generation had a glorious opportunity in relative terms, and I think we did understand that, and I think we relished it. I didn't think of it as being a great opportunity to become a dentist or any of the things that were on the order board. I didn't think of it in vocational terms. I just thought of it as an exhilarating and, yeah, genuinely sort of opening experience.
And maybe one of the last university generations too to have that openness, to have that non-vocational sense that you didn't have to make anything of this really, you're just here to study and learn.
That's right. And there was an exam in about October or November, but in the meantime, you know,
fun could be had. Well,
it was just fantastic fun. It was the social life was terrifically interesting, and the creative life was around the social life. It wasn't as if there was a venue for creative activity. There wasn't. I was majoring in English, for example, and I didn't need to write anything that came out of my own head or out of my own imagination. And they didn't really want to know what I thought about any of the things that we were reading. They wanted to know how successfully I could remember what F.R. Leavis thought. And I found that a bit limiting because...
There's a great tradition of that kind of thinking.
Well, there is. You know, compare and contrast, brackets, 30 marks, close brackets. Was the way we were looking at it. In fact, our minds were on fire at that age. Mm. It's also the age at which, in my parents' generation, they were soldiers and being sent off to, you know, something that might be hideous and would certainly change their lives. So it's that age, I think, rather than the particular place I was in.
Never mind the context, it's that moment in the formation of a life.
I think it is, yeah.
Were you political at university?
We were a little bit political, but I don't think we were as political as universities were here. There was no conscription in New Zealand for Vietnam. And in fact, there were quite a lot of people in New Zealand who were avoiding conscription in Australia.
How did Fred Dagg come to you?
Oh, Fred Dagg was something I'd always enjoyed doing with my friends, and it comes from a large, a large number of experiences in my early life. And the fact that the sort of the way that New Zealanders talked, which was not much in literature, it wasn't very well caught in literature, aside from Barry Crump, who was a wonderful writer and who wrote the book upon which the Wilder People movie, which going well here, was based. Aside from him, there wasn't much genuine New Zealand talk captured in literature, and there certainly wasn't any on radio because radio was still pretending to be Shropshire.
We're approaching a new Olympics, which is the reason why you're breaking cover.
Yeah, indeed. Well, this is
here, there, and everywhere at the
moment. ABC's merchandising push is to produce the boxed set of the games, which they say
it's
is available.
Noble undertaking.
Which they say is available in ABC shops, which they're closing.
Our earlier sort of comments on form and structure, that idea of the mockumentary, it was beautifully explored in the games.
It was very interesting to me to shoot something that was shot as a documentary and written as a satire and played as a drama. I didn't even understand those forms when we first began to do it.
Mm.
In fact, I knew I wanted it to look like a documentary, and we got two documentary makers to shoot it, and I said to them, "What do I mean when I say I want it to look like a documentary? Please explain me to myself." And they said, "Well, it means that if you have an argument in this room and you then leave In a drama, we would know that that was a possibility and there'd be a camera outside and you'd be seen coming out the door. In a documentary, we can't know that. So we would need to follow you. And I thought, oh. So we started putting the camera in the series in a much more obvious way. And the series became partly about how we watch television. If we're watching something that has the form of a non-fiction documentary, is it non-fiction? No, not necessarily.
1967 was your year, and of course we need a song, John, some music from that moment.
Yes, I've gone for the... this was the year that Sergeant Pepper was released, and I've chosen A Day in the Life for a couple of reasons. One, because I was... I think John Lennon was a very amusing observer of his own time. And there's a bit of journalism in this. And one of the things that was beginning to happen in the creative arts is that the distinction between journalism and other modes of expression and forms of communication was breaking down. And this song was written out of the casual observations of some things in a newspaper. It was the particular things he was looking at, but it was suggested they were just the random things that he happened to be looking at. So there's a, it again, is a slightly surreal element, and I always thought it was a fantastic song.
John Clark, you'll know from many places and many things, one of the stars, of course, of the games. Now, it's available, the complete series, one and two, as a DVD box set. Go to the ABC shop, which is number 21A, the internet.
Yes, it is. The key's under the door.
John, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
1967 was John's year, and the song from that year, for the Beatles, from Sgt. Pepper's, A Day in the Life.
A crowd of people turned away, but I just have to look, having read the and I went into a dream.